It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
What do Dolly Parton, Stevie Nicks, Whitney Houston, Pat Benatar, and Shania Twain have in common? Well, they're more than music legends. They're icons who defined generations. And now one performer is bringing their voices and stories to life on stage. My guest today is Nashville-based singer-songwriter Ray Raddick. It's the creative force behind Iconic Women of Music. It's a high-energy tribute show that celebrates the trailblazing women who changed the sound and soul of modern music. Iconic Women of Music has been touring nationally and now is going to be in Las Vegas for one night only, September 17th, with doors opening at Backstage Bar and Billiards, doors opening at 7 p.m. For ticket information, go to Backstage Bar and Billiards website, which is actually 601fremont.com. And for everything about Ray, go to rayraddick.com, and you can follow her on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this. This
will be fun because you started out at a very early age in the world of music. So can you give our listeners and viewers a little bit of your background who may not know about Ray Raddick and how she decided to end up in Nashville?
Yeah, so I've been in the music industry since I was 15 years old. So I've been, you know, I've been through the ringer. I originally am from Pennsylvania, and then I went to school for musical theater. I've been singing and dancing since I was 3 years old. So it's just kind of something in my blood. I've always been around the craft. And then I went to school for musical theater and I got into acting. And then I graduated and I moved to New York City, where I lived for almost a decade, where I was a professional full-time singer, dancer, actress. I was in a Super Bowl commercial. I was doing a bunch of different bands. I was on Broadway and I was a dancer and a model. And so I just kind of did everything in New York. And as much fun as it was living there, I always wanted to live in Nashville. I always had a thing for country music. And so when COVID hit in 2020, I thought, you know what? It's now or never, because one day I'm going to wake up and I'll be 40 years old, still living in New York. So I took the plunge and I moved to Nashville shortly after COVID kind of died down. And I've been here ever since, continuing to be a full-time performer.
I was thinking about what you were saying and the fact that you started when you were 15. So you've been at this for 5 years. That's pretty good. So,
oh, I wish. You're so sweet. I wish it was a magical 5 years.
But how do you stay in shape and how do you look so good, given the fact that, I mean, you work hard, you're a true entertainer and working all the time. So how is it you're able to maintain the energy, maintain the health, maintain the looks? How do you do all that? Vitamins, awesome. Drugs? Beer?
Oh, definitely not drugs. Oh my goodness. That's definitely a one-way street to not looking good. Just ask Keith Richards. just kidding. I love you, Keith. Just kidding. No, honestly, I mean, it's a really cliche answer, but of course, when you love what you do, it just kind of takes away the stress of it all. But of course, you know, it really depends on what you eat. You know, eating healthy, make sure you're getting your protein, your vegetables, your sunlight, drinking lots of water. And, you know, in terms of my fitness, anyone who's ever seen me perform, it's almost like a workout in itself. And so since I'm performing multiple times a week, I'm almost getting like a Pilates workout 3 to 5 days a week. So that's kind of easy. I don't really have to work that hard when it comes to that. But honestly, I think it all comes down to when you're genuinely happy, when you're doing what you love to do and you find the joy and you're surrounded by supportive friends and family, I think that ultimately comes to how your body responds and takes care of itself.
Yeah, it sounds like a cliche, but it's not. It's true basic reality, I think, of people who really are dedicated to their craft. And especially when you're performing and touring, that's the extra stress because you're on the road. You're not just in Nashville, you're traveling and performing the Iconic Women of Music show, which we'll talk about in a minute, but I want to kind of set the table, then you. Okay, so we got it in that order. We got it worked out. So, but the fact that you're able to do that and you also, like you said, you realize that you got to take a chance and you've got to make a move because you don't want to regret not taking the chance, not making the move, even if you don't succeed in whatever that is. And I'm speaking of everybody generally, even if one doesn't succeed, at least you tried, which is if you don't try, it's not going to happen. So
absolutely. Isn't there a quote by Wayne Gretzky or something? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
I think you're right. Or was that Wayne Newton, since you're coming to Las Vegas? I mean, who knows? But yeah, but you're absolutely right. And that's what I admire about what you're saying and what you represent is that you have to do it or try to do it, because if you don't try, you don't get the shot. You don't know what happened. So
yeah. And also too, I think it's really important, no matter who you are, you have to believe in yourself. And even if you fail, failure is not a bad thing. You know, failure means that you took a chance and you did something out of your comfort zone and you probably learned a lot of things along the way. So I feel like, I hope that society is moving in a general direction of just trusting themselves, trusting the process, and not being so goal outcome focus, because it really is about the journey and how you grow in that process, as opposed to whether you succeeded or failed.
When you moved to Nashville, is that when you came up with the idea for the iconic women of music, or did you have that in the back of your mind even in New York?
So I had it in the back of my mind. So when I was in New York, there is a singer-songwriter community, but it's definitely not as potent and big as Nashville. So, I was in New York. I was doing a lot of cover gigs. I was acting. But when you're doing cover stuff, you're doing somebody else's work. And I've always been a singer-songwriter. I released my first album when I was 15 years old. And so after, like I said, after COVID hit, I really started to get in touch with why I wasn't happy. I was a full-time performer. I was living in New York. And they say, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. And I was like, why am I so unhappy? And I realized it's because I wasn't really pursuing my true love of being a songwriter. I'm a performer, but I'm also a songwriter. So following that itch to go to Nashville, I had this idea for Iconic Women of Music in the back of my mind. And I said, that's going to be my plan B. You know, I'll go to Nashville. I'll try and be a singer songwriter. I would love to get a record deal and perform, but I'll just do Iconic Women of Music if that doesn't work out. And so when I first moved here, I was performing all my songs. I was writing with a lot of great people. And I just kind of mentioned it loosely to people, like, oh yeah, there's a show that I want to do eventually called Iconic Women of Music. And the more people that I told, they were like, no, you have to do this now. And I was like, no, it's going to be my plan B if something doesn't work out. And everyone encouraged me. They said, do it now. So I just kind of, I figured, maybe that was a sign from God or something that I should act fast. So now, luckily, I'm able to do both. I'm balancing both a singer-songwriter career as well as Iconic Women of Music. But that's kind of how it started, was, people in Nashville were like, do it.
Yeah, well, and it's a challenge because, as I mentioned, besides being on the road, when you're performing, you still have to make time for the songwriting. And that means sitting down, even if you're tired, and doing it. And that's a whole other craft compared to, or skill set, than it is for performing. So the fact that you're doing both and you're balancing it out, and you look like you haven't suffered from it yet. So that's good.
No, I mean, I think there's a little bit of discipline, of course, discipline and passion, but at least writing to me is therapy. Like I just kind of get into a flow and I never really have to force my songs. It just kind of comes out naturally. And if I'm not feeling creative that day, I won't force myself. But I'm really blessed to say that when it comes to songwriting, I just kind of get into a mindset of receiving, and then I just kind of channel it and I'm able to write songs pretty quickly.
What are you working on now? And we will, I promise we'll get into Iconic in just a moment, but I'm just wanted to kind of finish that up with the writing part of it in terms of, by the way, for our audience who may think I'm not making any sense, I'm on antibiotics, as I told Ray. So I may not be making as much sense as I usually don't. So at any rate, what songs are you working on now, or album are you working on now?
Yeah. So unfortunately, I feel like albums these days are out the window because everything is by playlist. So I'm working on singles right now, not necessarily an album. I'm hoping to release my next single in the fall or winter months. It kind of got a little backtracked because I've been so busy on the road. And my producer's like, are you going to be home enough to record, or are you just going to be in a van for the summer? So I'm actually very excited. I have two singles coming up. One I'm going to release in the fall or winter, and then the second one I'll release in 2026. And it's different than anything I've ever done, which is super exciting because you're always growing as a person and you're always experimenting and exploring. And I've always had a brand of being very pop and commercial and almost like the fun cheerleader girl next door. And so with this song, I really wanted to explore a character who's a little bit darker and who has a little bit more secrets and more of a real person, you know, because no one's cookie cutter. So this next song is a little bit darker. It's a little bit more intimate and dangerous, if those are the adjectives I could describe.
And those songs will be available on your website as well, rayraddick.com.
Yes, on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, anything that's a social media platform.
Excellent. Okay. So now your friends and colleagues suggested, you know what, you really should put together this show, Iconic Women of Music, again, at the Backstage Bar and Billiards, which we want to point out, Wednesday, September 17th, with doors opening at 7 p.m. So, and we'll keep mentioning that as we go through our conversation. When you started to put the, well, you've got so many icons to choose from. Mm-hmm. How did you prioritize them? And did you, I know you probably had to leave a few out, but how did you work it in your mind? Probably, I'm sure part of it was your personal feelings about certain performers, I would imagine.
Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't as tricky as you think. I mean, it broke my heart to leave out some artists, but, you know, there's only so much you can do in a 90 to 2 hour show. Otherwise, I'd be there for 5 hours doing every icon. but luckily, as I've said, I've been in the business since I was 15. So I'm very, very good at knowing, and I have enough experience of knowing the songs and the divas that are the most popular. And I actually credit the wedding bands that I've been affiliated with. I've been affiliated with like 5 or 6 different wedding bands. And so I've done a lot of parties, and almost every single person loves I Want to Dance with Somebody by Whitney Houston, you know, or everyone loves to sing along Like a Prayer by Madonna, or Respect by Aretha Franklin. So because I have so much experience in the cover world, when it came to putting together Iconic Women of Music, it was actually very simple because I already knew which divas have the most traction and what songs they're most known for. So that actually was very easy to put together. In terms of the flow of the show, that was different because what's really exciting about this show is that it's not just iconic women of rock or iconic women of country. It's iconic women of music, which means I get to be a chameleon and I get to showcase my acting skills of doing pop and country and rock and R&B and all these fun things. So in terms of the flow of the show, that was a little trickier because you have to make sure that all the icons have the same amount of playtime, as well as, you know, you don't want to start a show with a rock song and then end on a sad country song.
No, it makes sense. And you're mixing genres as well as performers. So you want to make sure the flow works very well. Now you could go old school since you are in Nashville now, and you could even add Patsy Cline and some other people like that. What do you think?
You know, what's funny is a lot of people do ask me about Patsy Cline. And the tricky thing with her is that she's wonderful. And of course she's an icon. But she's most known for her song Crazy, which is actually very, very slow. And some people have told me it's a little boring. So that's always been a little tricky for me because I never want to put a boring song in my show. And then another song that she's known for is called Walking After Midnight. Although when I have performed that, not as many people know the song. So Patsy Cline has been tricky. She's kind of on the bench. She's someone who I'm happy to bring out if people are in demand. Right. However, when I have performed her, people do come up to me afterwards and they say, you know, like she, like I could take her or leave her. But, you know, you can't do Iconic Women of Music without Tina Turner or without Cher. You know, there's certain icons that people want to see. And the feedback that I got about Patsy Cline was she was a hit or a miss.
Well, now I regret asking the question for Patsy. Okay.
No, I mean, I'm glad that you did, because a lot of people do come up to me and they say artists like that. And so, you know, this isn't just based on what I want. It's about how the crowd interacts as well. So I kind of take that into account of my own personal experience, as well as when I do experiment, I get audience feedback, and some people, and you know, people will be very honest these days about what they like and what they don't like. So she's kind of been on the fence with when it comes to audience feedback.
Well, your selection process is interesting too, because there are so many great singers in all of these genres, but you have to pick the iconic ones. And even in the iconic ones, you can't take, as I mentioned earlier, you can't pick them all. So you got to kind of be very selective. And when you're on stage and you're performing, how in depth do you go with the presentation? What I mean by that is this. Clearly, you have the talent for singing the music, but do you also change costumes? Do you also change hats or hair?
Of course. Okay, you have to. So, yeah. You know, I mean, I would be remiss if I did someone like Tina Turner in a ball gown, you know? So yes, of course. And that was actually the fun part of putting this show together, because each of these artists have their own brand. And, you know, me as an actress, I have to understand their brand. So, you know, someone like Dolly Parton, I don't want to wear just like a tank top and jeans. You know, you've got to wear the wig. You've got to be glitzy and glamorous. And so you kind of have to honor them. And so I do. I have every artist has a certain costume, even down to the color. You know, someone like Madonna, I have hot pink. And someone like Dolly Parton, I have yellow. So I had a lot of fun, and I went very in depth when it came to making sure when I do these artists, I represent them properly. However, the thing that I always try and say as a disclaimer is I'm not an impersonator. You know, I'm not trying to imitate them, and I'm not trying to be them. I just want to honor them through my vessel. So, you know, when I do someone like Dolly Parton, I'll do an accent to honor her. But once again, you know, some people will come up to me and they'll say, you know, you're not Dolly Parton. And I'm like, yes, I know. I'm not trying to be her. I'm just trying to honor what she did for the world. So, you know, it's very funny. People are interesting that way.
Yeah, you're paying tribute to them. It's not like you're trying to be them.
Yes, but you know, but I think it's a very important distinction, because it'll be my debut in Vegas, and there are impersonators in Vegas.
Correct.
So I always want to try and say, you know, those are two separate worlds. Being an impersonator is a beautiful skill. That's just not what I'm representing, but that's available in Vegas as well. But if that's what you're looking for when you come to Iconic Women of Music, that's not what you're going to get.
So you mentioned this will be your first time performing in Las Vegas, which is great. Mm-hmm. Do you anticipate, or would you like to come back and maybe do an ongoing situation, not necessarily a residency per se, but where you could return and perform again, either with Iconic Women or music or a different presentation that you would put together?
Absolutely. So my dream is to get a residency in Vegas. And I reached out to a couple casinos, and they're lovely, but of course they're being flooded by so many acts. And so the way that I kind of treated this Las Vegas debut is almost like a showcase. You know, something like this has never been done before. And of course there's tribute acts very similar to Iconic Women of Music, but they're not doing as many costume changes, or they have three lead singers. And for me, I'm a one-woman show. Right. So when I was putting the show together, I did say, you know, my dream is to be in Las Vegas and have a residency, because the show is so big, and it's almost like a freight train. You know, it's a party from start to finish. So this is, you know, I would love to put that out there. You know, I would love to have a residency in Vegas, but you got to start somewhere. So
I think the freight train is what's carrying all those costumes, because that's a lot of costumes for the show. It's a one-woman show, but it's a 9 million costume. So
you know, it's true. But you know, I mean, like I said, you know, I would feel so weird if I just sang Tina Turner in a gown. That just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, you have to embody their brand, and like I said, be an actress and kind of channel them.
No, absolutely. Have you been approached, or I don't know if that's the word. Have any of the icons that you've paid tribute to met you and said that they enjoyed the act?
No, unfortunately, I think they're all, some of them are dead or some of them are
never,
touring.
Yeah, they'll never approach you. Yeah, on that.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them are touring themselves. Like, I mean, my hero is Shania Twain and Dolly Parton, but they're off doing their own concerts anyway. So unfortunately, no. However, I would love if they did come. I would love to just have them see the show and how my interpretation of them and the medleys that I put together too. So when we come or when I perform, you know, some of them, I perform their full songs or we'll do a medley and we'll do a little bit of each of their iconic hits. And that's kind of how we just keep things interesting. I do think that Dolly's going to be in Vegas. So that would be really cool if she stopped by. And
That would be great. Yeah.
And Miss Shania Twain, I think she's in Vegas or she's touring or she's doing something, but
Dolly would have to put on a disguise to slip in there and watch you, right?
Oh goodness. I don't know. I think she's the type of person who's she's such an extrovert. I don't think she would mind, you know, just kind of coming
not. Probably not. Yeah. I just thought of another thing because of your versatility, a whole different show once you do this one is Iconic Men of Music. What do you think?
That's exactly what I'm planning. I mean, not to reveal my secrets, but you know, yeah, my plan is, you know, I can't do this forever. I mean, no one wants to see a 70-year-old woman doing Iconic Women of Music. So I'm going to try and take advantage of this while I can. But yes, in my arsenal, I am putting together Iconic Men of Music, iconic women of music country, iconic women of music rock. So kind of have different categories. But I figured let's start with just iconic women of music with myself and get the relationships and traction and even residencies that I'm hoping for.
Well, if you do the iconic women of country music, you can always add Tammy Wynette to the list.
Oh, yeah, she's wonderful. I would do her, of course, you know, Reba McEntire, Patsy Cline would, of course, be in there. There'd be so many icons, Trisha Yearwood, Martina McBride. I mean, I already know who would be great for that. But to, you know, to start a show, it's a big deal and you have to find the right person because I don't know if that would be something that I would want to do or if I'd like to have another singer who's better at country than me, you know.
Well, I think you've created in a way a franchise, a master franchise, which is iconic women of music. And then, as you say, could subdivide into country music, rock, et cetera, and have all kinds of things going on that level as well. So I want to mention again, it's at Backstage Bar and Billiards, Wednesday, September 17th, with doors opening at 7 p.m. And the reason that we're talking so early is we want people to know about it ahead of time because it's coming up. But, you know, time marches on and moves fast. So that works out. When you looked at each icon, let's say Dolly Parton, for example, her catalog is extensive, as others are. So you had to, you mentioned about doing medley, true also, but if you're picking one song that you would use to represent, say, Dolly, or maybe two songs per icon, I don't know how the show is structured, that's a whole process in itself, deciding which is the most effective representation of this icon, right?
Absolutely. But to be honest with you, I'll let you in on a little secret.
I'm here.
The way that I approached it was I went on Spotify and the great thing about Spotify is it tells you the top five songs most listened to. So I would have an idea. I mean, everyone knows Jolene. Everyone knows 9 to 5. But I would basically go on Spotify and I would look at that artist's top five songs. And if the song that I wanted to do wasn't in the top five, then I would consider, oh, maybe it's not as popular as I thought. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of my recipe for how I chose the songs that I did is, you know, I kind of fact checked on Spotify.
Yeah, I think that's a great technique. When you're performing and you perform, obviously with this show touring, have people come up to you afterwards and suggested additional songs or different songs for you to do as well?
Absolutely. And I love that because I always want to know what people are interested in hearing. And I welcome that. Like we mentioned before, Patsy Cline, you know, some people do approach me about her. But that's one of the great things that I love about this title that I created was it's Iconic Women of Music, which is specific enough, but it's also very, very broad. So absolutely. For the places that I'm returning to, the venues that I'm going to perform to like in next year, I'll have a whole different lineup.
Yeah.
So what's really great about that is like, you know, if I go to a venue in New Jersey and I do, you know, my regular lineup and they hire me back for 2026, I'll know for the next year, I'm going to sprinkle in some of the artists that we didn't do. Right. And that way I kind of like, you know, it keeps it interesting for them. It keeps it interesting for ourselves, but also it kind of allows me to incorporate other artists that maybe didn't get a chance the first year around.
But you're I would imagine you're compiling or have a master list of icons that you look at just to say, you know what, maybe I'll add so-and-so to my act, right? And then take out maybe one for a while, bring them back. Just like you said, if you're returning to a city and you want to freshen it up a bit, so the people that saw you last time will come see you and other people will come see you, but it'll always be interesting. So you must have like a master list of entertainers or icons that you can change around if need be.
Yes, I do. And like I said, I think that's exciting because there's been some bands that I have seen personally and they do the same show every year. And although that's great, it gets a little boring after a couple times. So it's exciting to come back and watch what they've done differently. You know, you should always be evolving the show. That's what gets returning customers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Before I let you go, two things. One is, how big is the, because you have a band that backs you. So this isn't pre-recorded tracks. This is an actual.
Yeah, no. So I want people to understand that,
right? Because there's unfortunately over the decades, as I've seen in Las Vegas, a lot of acts have gotten away from having a live band or a trio or quartet, and instead rely on tracks, which just doesn't communicate the way live music does.
Yes. And that's probably the musician in me. That's the artist in me although there's nothing wrong with karaoke tracks. And if that's what you do, that's perfectly fine. But for me, you know, art is about the community of people on stage. So I have a 5-piece band behind me and we're all family. Nice. And I just feel like that just brings a further community base and honors these artists because, you know, Whitney Houston's not singing to tracks. She's singing with a live band. So it just kind of brings together a whole different atmosphere.
Well, I think too, and when I mention about the tracks for performers, I'm not saying it in a negative way or a demeaning way. Some performers just don't have the budget, or the place that they're playing doesn't provide a budget for them to afford live music. And you're fortunate to be able to do that. Before I let you go, what would you like people to take away from seeing iconic women of music? Once they see it, obviously they're going to enjoy themselves, but is there something else beyond enjoyment that you want them to take away? I'm probably substituting my thinking for yours, but in other words, I suspect that it's a nod, it's a salute to these icons and a memory in many cases, because some of them are no longer with us.
Yeah. Honestly, the one thing that I want everyone, men, women, everything in between, is I want everyone to walk away feeling inspired and empowered. You know, all of these women who are in the show, as well as the ones who I wasn't able to include, they all were talented and smart and they were true to themselves and they stuck to their guns despite what other people told them, and they have a great discipline and a passion. And they all, like I said, they all kind of stuck to them, to what stays true to themselves. And I think that's why they lasted the test of time with their songs and with their brand. So I want everyone to remember that, you know, it's very easy to get caught into society and obligations and what other people want you to do. But really at the end of the day, you should just do what makes you happy, be around people that makes you happy, and make sure that you're always advocating for yourself, because if you're not advocating for yourself, then other people will take advantage of you. So I want everyone to walk away feeling that they can do anything because they can.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Rae Raddick, whose iconic Women of Music has been touring nationally and is now in Las Vegas for one night only at Backstage Bar and Billiards, Wednesday, September 17th, with doors opening at 7 p.m. And for ticket information, go to the Backstage Bar and Billiards website, which is 601fremont.com, 601fremont.com. And for everything about Rae, it's Rae. Go to RaeRaddick.com and follow her on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and of course, Spotify and iTunes and everything else under the sun. And Rae, thanks for being on the show.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I'll see you at the show.
See you then.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world.
Hey, Las Vegas, anything you want us to be.